If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello and welcome to yet another Motor1.com Test Car Happy Hour. Thank you guys so much for joining us. My name is Seth Miersma, Editor-in-Chief of Motor1. Today I've got joining me senior editors Jeff Perez and Brett T. Evans. We're all dealing with various technological or weather-based issues, so please, please bear with us as we attempt to endeavor to carry on here. As ever, you guys, no matter where you're watching, we would love to read your comments and answer your questions. You can leave those whether you're watching us on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, whatever platform you see us on. Just type out your question and we'd love to get back to you. So going to be maybe a shorter one today, only three cars to talk about. I feel like we've had four or five cars or six topics the last few of these that we've done. So maybe we'll just dig a little bit deeper. But Brett, why don't we start with you? You were driving the newest product, the Audi's new Q8 e-tron out in local to you in California this week.
Yes, sort of local. Yeah, it was great. It was a really beautiful drive. As you can see, they took us up through the redwoods, which was just gorgeous. So that was really nice. But what I couldn't believe is I drove the regular e-tron the pre-facelift e-tron probably about a month ago. And it's fine. It's a perfectly fine EV. Doesn't do anything amazingly, but it's not terrible either. I couldn't believe how substantially they'd improved it when they turned it from an e-tron into a Q8 e-tron. It's just suddenly such a competitive, interesting choice in the segment. And I really liked it a lot.
Yeah, I think it's so cool. So we're looking at right now a photo of the Sportback, if I'm not very much mistaken. So there are a couple different trim levels, but they really are slicing this one up a million ways, right? You can get a Q8, SQ8, and you can get both of those in a different roof line, essentially. So,
And if you go for the Sportback, which is more aerodynamic, you get a little bit more range, and you can also get a plus package, an ultra package, which gives you slightly smaller wheels, but more range still. So it finally hits 300 miles of range. When last year it was doing like 225, 230 in its most efficient spec. So kind of an impressive improvement.
This one to me, I've never driven any of the e-tron SUVs, but it feels like I always forget the previous gen. I always sort of forgot that it was there, sort of like the Jaguar I-Pace, like good, solid luxury EVs that you kind of forget about with the newer stuff. And I think that the branding was sort of the problem with that too, with all the e-tron stuff that they have now. But I like that they're sort of, you know, making this the Q8 again, basically, which, you know, it's just an electric Q8, which so it makes sense. And I always really liked how this thing looked. I think the design of a lot of Audi's EVs are better than a lot of the other EVs out there.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really cool. I only had a little bit limited experience with the Sportback. I did the first drive of the Q8 e-tron. I did the first drive of the SQ8 e-tron in the Canary Islands late last year, I believe, and was super impressed with the car. We were driving European spec models, and I mostly got to drive the standard back one. Although they had a couple of Sportback ones there, kind of used by the European journalists specifically. So I think it looks beautiful. I did get a chance to sit in the back, and it's kind of the standard, you know, complaint when you're looking at the coupe version of these SUVs. The added range is nice, but if you really are going to use those back seats a lot, then I think that you lose a decent amount of utility in rear seat space and in cargo space too. So But the trade-off is interesting, right? Like, you're definitely getting something stylish. What's fascinating to me is, like, this is that's a kind of car, a kind of vehicle that we've been complaining about as auto journalists for a long time. And yet there are just more and more of them on the ground every year, right? So it's clearly very popular. People love the way that they look, and they appreciate whatever utility is left, right?
It's like the opposite of brown station wagon auto journalists, the classic tripe. Like, don't listen to what we say, because clearly everyone's buying these Sportbacks no matter how much we complain about them.
Well, and I kind of think that Audi Sportbacks are usually a little bit less compromised than like the X4 or the X6 compared to the 3 and the 5. Mm-hmm. Because, yeah, it does, like, you do lose a little bit of headroom for sure, but you still have almost as much cargo space under the window line as the regular e-tron. And you know, I think it looks pretty good. I usually don't love the way the coupe overs look, but I think the Sportbacks usually are the exception to that rule. So, you know, I kind of dig that. But it was kind of just down to the driving experience for me. Like, it just feels very much, you know, the BMW iX is great. It's so, so cool. And there's lots of cool technology. The EQE and the EQS SUVs are kind of the same. This just feels like an Audi. Like, it's not super different from what you'd experience if you bought like a gas powered Q8. So I definitely think that they're kind of playing to a very specific market there, being like, they want maybe not as much conquest. They just want to like convince their current buyers to jump into an e-tron the next time they go in for a trade-in.
Yeah. One of the things that I really loved. So a couple things we can talk about the interior, but which I was really impressed with when I saw the car. But one thing that stands out in from my drive was that it was so quiet. Right. And obviously it's an electric vehicle. I know that they're all very quiet relative to anything that's internal combustion of anything. But the other thing there was, again, I was driving European models that had completely different mirrors. They had the camera only mirrors, right? So they're just little blades off to the side. And although I wasn't on any kind of like, you know, real highway, like American style highway, I was doing, you know, at points for stretches, 60 and 70 miles an hour, right? And I thought that at that speed, it was a really pretty silent. I wonder how much of that was the reduced drag and lack of wind noise, right where it can, you know, it has the shortest path to your ear, basically, like wind noise off that mirror is a lot of times what we're hearing. So I don't know, Brett, where would you rate it in terms of the other EVs you've driven in terms of wind noise?
Well, so that's kind of the cool thing about the e-tron is, yes, it is more aerodynamic this year than last year. And some of that does go into like the wind control, you know, so you have more aerodynamics under the car, which means you don't need to use as much or the insulation, you know, in the floor can do a better job of keeping the road noise out. But they also, every single e-tron comes standard with Q8 e-tron rather comes standard with acoustic glass. So it really is very well like isolated just in general, like even at, you know, 70 and 80 miles an hour, feels very much quieter than I was expecting. You know, given the lack of a gas engine to kind of like cover up some of those noises, you kind of like don't realize how noisy gas engines are because they just kind of like lull you into the background a little bit. But this one, without having that, it's still very, very like composed and very like good with wind noise. I was riding with one of their with Audi's product planner, chief of product planning, and he was saying that they very deliberately don't have electric propulsion noise in the Q8 e-tron. There's like the low speed noise that you have when you're just kind of driving around town to warn pedestrians that you're coming past, but at high speeds when you pin the throttle, you don't really hear any like augmented synthetic noise. And he kind of like suggested that the reason you have that in many other EVs is to kind of hide some of those like that lack of noise control that other EVs might have. And so it's kind of like a funny little shot across the bow at, like, you know, BMW, their Hans Zimmer soundtrack is amazing. It's so good. Is it because they didn't do the job of like controlling wind noise from the start? I don't think so personally, but like, you know, he kind of like seems to suggest that maybe some of that extra secondary synthetic propulsion noise is there just because they didn't get the wind noise down to where they wanted it. Not specifically to BMW, just kind of all over across the board.
Yeah, yeah. They don't want to go on the record of taking pot shots, but like, obviously, if an Audi guy is saying that, you know that it's probably aimed at another German. Listen, I've experienced this too. Like, I think, you know, I'm very much on record. I think all of us are on record as loving, for the most part, what Polestar is doing right now. But like a Polestar 2, for instance, is a car that I remember there being like, okay, I can hear some suspension noise, for instance. Like, I can hear some mechanical noises that normally would be smoothed over by, in an ICE car, would be smoothed over by engine sound. Or maybe if you had a more aggressive, like kind of manufactured sound in the interior, you kind of mitigate some of those. So I understand the theory of it. It doesn't bother me a ton. I'm also somebody who's almost always got music on or a podcast on too. So it's, I always talk about the EVs just really creating a nicer sound stage for what I want to listen to, as opposed to me being overly concerned with noises that I don't want to hear in them.
Yeah, you know, it's definitely kind of like, I'm kind of the same. I don't really care that much about a little whisper of wind noise over the A-pillar or whatnot, but they're very proud of the work that they've done. Audi's very proud of the work that they've done with the Q80, trying to kind of like minimize that. And I have to say, like, they did it. If that is a concern, then an e-tron is definitely a pretty solid choice in that respect. Very serene, very quiet.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah, it's a cool car. This is what I'm talking about. I'm anxious to get into it because as I said, I did most of my driving the SQ8. Super impressive, like amazing acceleration and all, you know, I think right up there in terms of like the performance oriented or the performance trimmed versions of other EV SUVs that are out there right now. But you know, the stock, whether it's Sportback or not, like the stock Q8 version of this is going to be a car that's much more attainable, much more in the price range of a lot of people who are shopping for it. And, you know, as we say this all the time, but like the market can handle many, many more electric SUVs yeah. right now. Lots of people want them. I think the standard Q8 will be a really good option for a lot of people, even though it's, I don't remember what it starts at, but I know it's not affordable.
I mean, it's not cheap, but yeah. You know, it starts at about $77,000, which is a right. lot less than the iX and about the same price as the EQE. The EQE SUV at that price is going to be quite a bit slower and it's not going to have as much range. So, I mean, like this is kind of what I said in my review, that like the previous e-tron SUV, like you got like a conventional Audi driving experience. You got like, you know, it wasn't challenging at all. The downside to all of that was you also didn't get like a ton of EV range and you kind of like had to just take some sacrifices there. This one doesn't have that anymore. This one has 285 miles of range and it's least efficient, you know, body style spec. And then it also charges at a rate of up to 170 kilowatts, which is right in line with EQE SUV and iX. And so it kind of like, you don't have to make those sacrifices anymore if you just want a normal luxury SUV, and that's pretty cool. I appreciate that about the e-tron a lot. I don't know that it'd be the one that I would get, because I do love the iX and I do kind of love that science fiction interior. Mm-hmm. But you know, just for people who like don't need to make a statement every time they go anywhere, I really appreciated the Q8 e-tron's driving experience, and then you know the electrical specifications of it now are solid.
Yeah, looking at it, I'm looking at some of the interior photos from it now too, and thinking about the price point, like it's actually strategically it's really interesting, right? Because at around 70, high 70s, 80, it's falling in between Model Y and Model X from Tesla, for sure, right? Or it's like the top end of a Model Y and kind of still well below like the bottom end of a Model X these days. But what you don't have to do, I mean, and this is not a Tesla bashing thing at all. I'm just saying like, it's a really nice interior. I think Audi has got a ton of technology in here. It's got, you know, like a lot of stuff that you'd want to use in terms of and to impress your friends and things like that. But it's less of that. It's more normal, right? It's more of a normal car interior. If you're coming from a more traditional vehicle, if this is your first EV, this is going to be an easier transition. I think in something like Tesla and other EVs too, they're trying to go more extreme and really kind of like change the paradigm, quote unquote, of the driving experience in addition to the powertrain, which a lot of people don't like, you know, because it feels unfamiliar. It feels a little uncomfortable. So I think that most people get into this Audi interior and be like, yeah, I get how to drive this thing. It's,
yep.
it's you know, it's special, but not otherworldly, I guess.
Yep, exactly.
Cool. Awesome. Well, let's shift gears heavily here, Jeff, because you're in something brand new. We haven't even seen the, we're still working on the coverage that you're going to see on Motor One here, but a first drive vehicle that you've actually got at home, which is not super usual these days.
Yeah, I am driving the 2024 Chevy Silverado HD, which is a big boy. It's a big boy truck. It's not brand new. It does carry over a lot of the same, you know, mechanical stuff, but a lot of the big changes on the outside are with that grill right there. You have that sort of the same Chevy grill on everything. It's a little cleaner this year. There's some different lighting elements, and I think they put the bow tie back on as opposed to the Chevy word mark that they had last year.
Yeah.
And then this is the Z71 package, which you can see in this blurry video. And it adds some nice wheels, some blacked out elements, off-road tires, some other cool stuff. It's a neat looking truck, I think. Mm-hmm. I don't necessarily love the giant grill
right.
that Chevy does in general, but I think it kind of works here given how massive this truck is. And then the interior is like totally brand new. You get these fancy new screens, 13.4-inch touchscreen, 12.3-inch digital instrument cluster. Really, really nice. Like, it's all of GM and Chevy's latest infotainment stuff. Super clean interface, super quick, really easy to use. I think this is, again, we talk about this all the time, like connectivity issues with your phone. Is sure. it your phone? Is it the infotainment system? I've been having issues with this one connecting a lot, and I don't know why. It's giving me a hard time every time I try and connect my phone. But other than that, really good system, and I like using it. And then let's see what else. So this one is the diesel, right? The 6.66 Duramax, 470 horsepower, 975 pound-feet of torque, which is
monster.
Lot of torque.
Yeah.
And some of the other HD trucks I've driven in the past, they have, you know, a ton of torque, but they're still massive, so they don't really get off the line too quickly. But this thing is actually kind of quick. Like, it has some decent giddy up when you get on it off the line. Like, it doesn't feel like it's moving too much weight. I think the extra torque they added this year, and at 25% better low end torque this year. And they say it's for towing, but it also just helps in general, you know, move the truck along, which is really nice.
Sure.
It's look, like, when you take these loans, obviously the big draw for a lot of people buying these trucks is towing and hauling and capacity and stuff like that. But just as like an everyday truck, it's not too bad. I would actually say that the new off-road trims that they have for the HD, you can get the ZR2, you get I think the Trail Boss is also new this year. It might've been new last year. I think that would actually be a pretty cool lifestyle truck if you're into like big trucks. This one's a little hard to like say it's a cool lifestyle truck. It's kind of bland visually, like, just, you know, it doesn't have a ton of cool looking features. But it's just a good solid truck, you know?
Yeah, I think, first of all, I do think it looks really good. I agree with you on the stacked grill. I think that the Chevy grills on the HD trucks, both pre and post this most recent update, they're just so massive. They're so tall. And I think that that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to have this big imposing face. And it just doesn't do a ton for me. But I was just recently in GMC Sierra, completely different trim, like the AT4X, like a really, really impressive truck that we're going to talk about for sure. But I agree. Like, I think that the GM trucks, you guys know I don't usually like to like lump everything together into GM, but I think when you're talking about GMC and Chevy, it actually does make more sense because so many of the features are unique. But like, things like, we're looking at the multi-fold tailgate right now, which has a lot of like really great usable functionality. It's kind of a party trick, but I think I found myself using it multiple times in the last loan that I have. Everything is very plug and play. And I think the others in terms of like towing and stuff, I don't know what the rating on this truck is. Obviously you're right. Like, that's very important, but,
So this one is 26,000 pounds this year, which is 2,000 pounds more than last year. And I want to say off the top of my head, that makes it the best towing, gives it the best towing capacity in the class. I think Ford and Ram are a little bit behind that, but yeah, 26,000 pounds. Like, at that point, I don't really know what you're towing as an everyday person without a CDL and like, you know, a business where you're just towing trucks or whatever all the time. So it's
gooseneck anyway. Like, you've got, so that's crazy. Well, it's actually funny that you say that, because my point was going to be, typically, and maybe this is the case, obviously everybody likes to win, but typically I think that Chevy and GMC have been more conservative in their tow ratings in the past because it's sort of a strategy, right? Like, I think that they want their customers to have easy and reliable towing in it. And that's a little bit more important than being able to put that biggest number out there. Although that's clearly an important thing for marketing too. So,
yeah. Oh, of course. Well, I mentioned the extra torque that they added, like low end torque, better low end torque, just to like, because even when you have this much of a towing capacity and you have this big of a truck towing close to max or like even, you know, 3/4 of the way to max, you're like, still, it's still a lot of mass you're moving. So you're not moving fast at all, really. But having that little extra sort of energy off the line really helps, especially if you're at a stoplight or, you know, you're trying to go around a turn. Like, you don't want to be just chugging, you know, too slowly where, you know, you're gonna ruin somebody's day or mess up traffic or somebody, so something. So yeah, it's good that they added that little bit of extra torque.
So it's, yeah, I agree. Like, the, I don't, maybe I end up having to tow something twice a year, right? Mm-hmm. Is usually a good average for me. So I'm probably a pretty good, I'm not a good candidate to buy a truck like this, but I'm a good candidate to care about the comfort of towing. Right.
Yeah.
And I would say that, like, yes, having the extra power and torque is great because you just feel less stressed about moving heavy stuff when you have to tow it. The other thing that and I know that, like, for sure, like, Ram has done a lot of, like, really interesting work here too. I haven't experienced it as much in the more recent products from Ford, but a lot with the GM stuff, they're in car, they're like, you can set up very complex towing profiles and trailering profiles, the camera work that they're doing. I know that they have and you don't have a trailer, so we couldn't even show it, but they have like that see-through camera view, right? So it looks like they sort of stitched together an image with all the exterior cameras so you can see through the back of your trailer, which is super cool. That kind of stuff is, if you're not towing all the time, it makes it easier to hook up. It makes you feel more comfortable when you're on the road. It makes it more easy to maneuver whatever you're towing, both, like, you know, kind of on the freeway and when you're parking it somewhere. I think that's really important quality of life stuff for truck owners who are towing stuff, not every day, right?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, and the other crazy thing about these trucks is that they offer Super Cruise while you're towing. Like, if you have a truck that's equipped with Super Cruise, you can use it while you have a trailer mounted behind you, and it will do all the same functionality. It'll do like the automated lane changes and monitor the blind zone next to the trailer. Like, there's just a lot of functionality in these trucks that is just kind of tailor made to make that, like, habitual towing process a lot easier and a lot less obnoxious.
I've got to ask, you should probably know this, but is Blue Cruise that? So I did a really early demo of Blue Cruise a few years ago, and I know at that time they weren't offering it while towing. Or I think that you could do it, but it wasn't recommended. It wasn't like fully supported with the F-150 at that point. Do you guys know if that's changed yet? Because obviously they want to get to that same place too, right?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I would assume, yeah, they want to get to that point, especially if Chevy and GMC have it. But I don't know if Ford has gotten to that point yet. This truck actually doesn't have Super Cruise equipped on this one. I don't know how much it costs, but anytime you have a car that offers Super Cruise, I feel like you should just pay whatever the cost is because Super Cruise is so damn good, you know? So that would be nice on this truck, especially if you're using it as sort of like a lifestyle truck. Super Cruise it would be really good.
Yeah. Neat. Cool stuff.
I really dig the way these look. I really dig kind of the, like, Tonka style. I know that it's, like, so huge and that the design of trucks has just gotten so outlandish nowadays, but
massive.
Like, there's kind of like some weird, like, square body or OBS vibes going on with this thing where the hood and the body line and the way that everything works together just kind of looks like an old truck to me, which I kind of dig.
Yeah, like I said,
I it has a yellow bow tie and not a everyone I've seen for like quite a while around here all have the fully blacked out package.
Oh yeah,
right now. Yeah. And I'm old school enough to like the yellow bow tie.
I dig gold the yellow bow tie. Sure. Yeah. I think it needs a better color. The gray is a little meh, but like I said, the they have the two off-road trims now that are really cool for this truck, and I want to drive those because, like, this is it's a huge truck, but it's also, like, pretty comfortable and really nice inside. So I could see someone buying one of the off-road trims and just having that as a lifestyle truck, and they, you know, might not ever tow anything, but it's still a huge cool truck to have, which It's a big thing down here in Florida. People love their big trucks.
Oh, for sure. Yes. For every one HD truck that I see that's actually doing work, you know, has a stake rack on it or is pulling something. And again, Southeast Michigan is still, listen, there are trucks everywhere, but like, there are a lot of them around here too. I see probably 10 of them that are just, you know, like one guy is driving them with the windows down and his hat on backwards. So
there was a great photo that popped up on my Instagram feed a couple of days ago where it was like, I think it was a dually F-Series Super Duty that had like six plastic picnic chairs strapped down in the bed. And it was just so, so perfect.
Oh, man.
And that's kind of the vibe.
Well, what's the thing now that they do where they squat the back end and the front end lifts up? I've been seeing that all the time now.
The famously outlawed in both North and South Carolina, Carolina squat.
Yes. Gosh, I see that so often lately. That's like, I'm sure they're going to have to I don't think Florida will outlaw it, but that's the thing. That's the thing that people are doing now. So
Florida outlaws other things. They don't outlaw stuff like that.
Exactly.
real interesting ecosystem over there. But I'm sure that you're right that this is a great truck for the Sunshine State, especially if it was in an off-road trim. Strange as that may seem to people who off-road. Cool. All right. Well, I didn't even ask. Like I'm just going to guess this has got to be in the high 80s, $90,000.
It's 80 mid 80s ish. I don't have the exact spec right in front of me. It's an LT crew cab with the Z71 package.
Okay.
And then there's a ton of options you can get on it. And I don't have the exact sheet in front of me, but it's got to be mid 80 ish. So not cheap, but also not like insanely expensive. I mean, this is a pretty like mid-range option for the HD. So like, it's not a crazy expensive truck, I don't think.
Yeah, and I'm sure if you're going spec by spec against the competition too, they stack up usually. I mean, everybody's got to be very competitive on price. So just as a reminder to those of you out there watching, if you guys want to read more, Jeff is working on the first drive of this truck right now. So we are going to have that published on MotorOne.com. Very soon. I don't know if it's going to be tomorrow or next week, but check back and look for that story. All right. Maybe we're going in order of bells and whistles here. I'm not sure who ranks second, but I've been driving a car that has more of those than I think anything that I've driven this year, for sure. The 2023 BMW 760i xDrive, which is, I was very sad to find out, and again, like I've repeated this multiple times, like sometimes my knowledge of cars is, or at least on the ground, is out of date because I was out of the rotation for a number of years. And the last time I had something with a 760 badge on it, it had a 12-cylinder engine under the hood. So I was a little bit disappointed to find out that instead I had just a very good, mildly hybridized 4.4-liter turbocharged V8, right? Making still like a not insignificant, it's, what is it? It's like 560 horsepower, or I have the specs pulled up, 536 horsepower and 553 pound-feet of torque. So more than enough power to get out of its own way, but without the beautiful music that can be produced from 12 cylinders working in concert, which is a little disappointing. Man, you guys, this car is something else in terms of like really from the outside all the way in. This has got, we just ran the coverage again. Go to MotorOne.com. Yesterday, we saw the new 5 Series, right? And we're, you know, having a lot of conversation and I think Brandon was talking to BMW about sort of the strategy behind the design of the 5 Series. And there's a lot of conversation about what they did or did not do vis-a-vis the design of the 7 Series, which is just wild, right? We're moving into the interior on the video now, but from the exterior, you can see this car is, the car that I had is white over black trim. It's just got, talk about gigantic grills. Like I would like to see this thing stacked up next to the Silverado HD that we just saw, because it is, the grill is just massive on it. And, just wildly complicated. I don't know that I actually think that it looks ugly or it's certainly not pretty, but it's super impressive. Like in person, this car just like on the road still kind of has a little bit of that spaceship vibe. Eventually I'm sure that'll go away as people see a lot of them, but It doesn't look like anything that I've ever seen before, with those really tiny, super powerful headlights and just a gigantic grill. Am I crazy in thinking that from the front of this, it looks like the i7, it looks like an electric car, even though this is the gas powered one. Yeah.
I thought you had the i7. I didn't even know this was the gas one until we talked about it earlier.
Yeah.
Because they look so similar.
Yeah, big plastic grill that has active shutters, to adjust for cooling at speed and all of that stuff. But it does read like an EV to me. That's probably intentional, right? They probably want there to be some real strong family design in the 7 Series.
That's overall. Right. We have an article on Inside EVs that Brandon Turkus wrote from interviewing the designer at BMW about their EV strategy. And they very clearly say that they want their EVs to look just like regular cars. The question then is whether you think that regular cars look like regular cars or not, because right. It is very futuristic and very spaceship like you said.
Yeah, I don't know if I honestly don't know what to think about it. Like, if you're going to do a design like this that is very strong and very original, but definitely not something that everybody and their brother is going to be like, this is a super pretty car. It does make sense to do it on your kind of flagship executive car in my mind. I think a car at this scale can get away with more than one at a smaller scale. And somehow, even though it's even more bold, it looks a little less goofy than maybe it did when we were first seeing BMW start to make these increasingly large kidney grills on, like 4 Series and 3 Series and stuff like that, right? It pulls it off a little bit better in my mind, but maybe I'm just like, the bloom isn't off the rose yet because I still have the car in my driveway. I'm not sure.
It's hard. I mean, my biggest issue with BMW design sort of as a whole is the front end of all of their cars is just so busy and so like crazy. And this car included, like, I don't think the 7 Series looks good, like really at all based on just the front end design. I think they just went so far in the wrong direction. But then you look at like the profile of this car, like the side profile of this car, like the M240i, or like even the new 5 Series has a little bit of this like really angular, edgy kind of cool design. That's like, it's like 70% of the way there to being really good. They just need to fix the face of all of their cars. I don't understand.
I saw a Photoshop when this car was just brand new and announced where they kind of like integrated the headlights. They didn't do the split headlight design and they cleaned up the grill just a little bit. And it looked like an E38. Like it looked like that super legendary 7 Series from the 90s and early 2000s. And it was just like, I completely agree with you, Jeff. I think that like the side of it looks pretty cool. I think it's a pretty appealing design overall, good proportions, very, very like strong, like bold proportions, but it's just that front end that kind of kills it for me. So
to Seth's point too, it's like, it definitely has a presence. It's not like you're going to mistake this car for anything else. I think that's part of why they did, the crazy design is to make it stand out. And in that sense, I think it works.
You guys know that I'm really into watches, and it reminds me a little bit of I guess the point is the car looks very expensive, right? There are lots of watches out there that cost like tens of thousands, $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 out there that you look at and you're like, that's probably a lot of money. But then you also step back and say, I would never wear that. Like, it's not appealing in any way, shape or form, even though it's like very obvious that it's an expensive object. I think maybe that's kind of where BMW is at with the 7 Series in terms of exterior design. If the messaging you want to get across is like, I'm an important wealthy person, like you are absolutely going to do that in this car, right?
There are plenty of people who want to send that message with their watches and their cars. So right. I think it works.
Yeah.
I was going to say designer sneakers even too. Like Balenciaga is, some of those sneakers are really bad, but they also cost like $500. And the people who wear them would drive a 7 Series and have an ugly watch. Like it's just a status thing, absolutely, from top to bottom.
So moving to the inside, I posted a photo on Twitter. So this car has got the theater screen, the BMW theater screen, which is, I should have this back in front of me. Of course I didn't look it up, but it's like 3 feet long, right? This is a screen that folds down from the roof for the rear occupants. It's meant to be kind of like an executive experience, and you can easily have, two kind of like much larger than average displays going split between the two things. So two people could be, mirroring their laptop screen and doing work, or watching media on the screen itself. I set it up to play PJ Masks, which is a cartoon show for my 4-year-old when I picked him up from daycare, and his mind was blown a little bit by it. Some interesting things about it as we're looking in the interior. So one, all right, so these are very cool. It's got the car has got in the rear seats, it's got touch screen controls in the door panels that I actually think are neatly integrated. The idea of having a kind of smartphone-like control is not at all new. A lot of times in older versions of this, it was a kind of pop-out device that would be in the, you know, center console or something like that. I think these are out of the way, but also the screen itself is really bright, high resolution, and easy to use in terms of the controller. The funny thing about the screen is it's more limiting than you would expect. Now, it moves around neatly based on where the driver and front passenger seats are, but you can't always have the screen down, right? So if you're somebody who's tall like me and I'm all the way back, like it was basically telling me I could not fold the screen down at some point because the seat was in the wrong position, right? Now again, like it'll modulate a little bit. It moves. You can't like, you're not going to crush it if you move back because the screen will move forward towards the rear passengers or go up. But it's not exactly seamless. It's not completely out of the way for sure. And the other thing is, I was talking to somebody the first day that I had this about it, and they asked whether or not there was a camera-fed rear view mirror. And the answer is no, right? When you're backing up or you know, there are rear cameras, right? So when you're backing up or maneuvering or doing anything, that big central display for the driver shows everything that you need to see, the bird's eye view, like the rear view and all that stuff. But if I'm just driving and checking my mirror to see who's behind me or see what's going on and the screen is down, you see nothing but black, right? So that's a little bit of a blind spot, literally, for the car. If you're actually driving with that down, I'm not sure how frequently that would be the case, but obviously, if you're spending all the money to get the package with that display, then you might want to use it, right? That's definitely an interesting party trick amongst many in this vehicle.
I was going to ask too. I mean, what was the? I know BMW requires you to sign in and create an account and do all this stuff just to get access to.
Yeah.
Netflix. I mean, I had trouble doing that. I don't know if you sort of experienced the same thing. It just felt like an extra step that you didn't really need to do.
Yeah, I wasn't able to. So super producer Kyle and I were talking about this before we went on air, right? That BMW has got Amazon baked into the software of the car. So in theory, you should be able to have an Amazon account, and they have it branded as Amazon Fire. Which is obviously their streaming device. But I wasn't able to make that work. And I think it's because of what you're saying, Jeff. I think that you need to have the BMW app and a profile set up in there, and then what's called an eSIM, so that they can basically connect your data with the car and make everything work seamlessly. Just trying to sign into my Amazon account via the screen that you're seeing here didn't work. It was failing every time. So I think that you have to have multiple pieces connected. I have not successfully made it work yet. I would probably have to contact like our PR rep with BMW and ask about like kind of them giving me a blank user eSIM that I could use to try it, which I might do just to see how it works. But I want to caution and say like that it's complex for sure. I have a feeling that that's the kind of complexity that you get solved by your dealer when you're buying a $150,000 vehicle. Before you ever drive it home, right? They make sure that all that stuff is hooked up on your phone and working, and then it's just about you remembering it. So
yeah, that's what I was going to say. It's once you get a, once you, if you buy this car, it probably won't be as complicated, but still just the, like, cause I had the Chevy Suburban High Country a few weeks ago as well. And it has the dual sort of rear screen entertainment, which obviously is not as nice as this. But it was just like an iPad. Like you just go, you click what you want, you sign into your Hulu account, you sign into your Netflix. Like it felt much more seamless than a lot of the companies just want you to sign into their system for some reason. I don't know why. It drives me nuts when BMW says sign into this or another company says sign into that just to watch, you know, something in your on your screen. But that's just an old man, maybe.
Well, it kind of just comes back to like the theater screen notwithstanding, this is like obviously like a G-Wiz kind of feature that its sheer size alone will get some people to spring for it. But in general, I kind of just think that in-car entertainment systems are like obsolete. There's an iPad. Every household has an iPad. Kids have their own iPads usually. Like, it's just, it doesn't seem like it's ever worth the added cost to like also have to sign into your Amazon Fire account and get and sign up for a Uconnect trial and all this other stuff when you can just do it all on an iPad much more easily.
It would have to be a really specific use case. You know, you wonder in markets in like China and the Middle East, or even Europe, I guess, to a certain extent, where a car like this might be actually used. So if I'm the owner, I'm sitting in the back more often, right? Then it might be something that you care about a lot more that you pay for. Whether or not you use it, I'm not sure, but you can at least like wrap your head around the use case a little bit more. In the US, where we drive more than we ride, and you know, chauffeurs and stuff are infrequent, even for, you know, the very wealthy and cars like this, maybe it doesn't make as much sense. But in any event, one thing, and we don't have to show it again, Kyle, but one thing I wanted to point out, because I didn't know this, the only time I saw the theater display was in that when I first was at the reveal of the 7 Series and the i7. And I didn't realize that when you actually activate it, the window shades all go up too, which is just like a neat little party trick too. So it's creating like this like cool environment. I don't know. Like I had to look up one of BMW's videos to see when I was just trying to figure out how to hook it up. And they show like an executive in the back with her laptop in her lap. And then it's connected to the screen and she's mirroring it up there. So it's like a second monitor like I have at my desk right now. Are people really going to like, is that functionality that people really need because they're working on their commute? Probably they just use their laptop. But it's neat anyways.
That sounds like a good way to get car sick, sitting in the back on your laptop and watching the screen.
Yeah. Well, actually, that's a great segue, because the other thing is that this car, like, and Jeff, maybe you experienced this. I think you did with the i7. Like, I'll start with the disappointing thing. I'm mostly really impressed. The disappointing thing in driving this car for me, because it's got all that power, I'm very used to, like, I think I've driven every generation of 7 Series, at least a little bit, and the last few a lot, right? As a member of the media and reviewing them. The 7 Series was always at least a little bit fun to drive, right? Every version of it was either through software or because it had a fantastic engine or the right sort of ride handling balance. None of them ever really felt like a sports car, but if you pushed it on a good road, it would kind of open up the aperture and feel like a fun car, at least for a little while. Right. I'm not getting this with this car. Right. I drove this car on the one windy road by like near me with the intention of doing my whole kind of loop, and realized, like, kind of bailed on it halfway through, not because the car was doing anything bad. It was like the handling was very precise. It's just zero feedback. No, like very muted soundtrack, very muted sound, even in their aggressive driving program, their sort of emotional driving program. It just wasn't fun. Like when I'm taking the car on the highway, or again, like doing sort of normal school run, pick up, drop off in traffic, it's beautiful. The ride quality is stunning. Absolutely. Like probably unparalleled. One of the best I've experienced in a really long time. Silent in there, amazing seats, beautiful interior, not fun to drive. Like, is that a miss for BMW in 2023, or is that just where we're at with the brand?
Well, I have very strong opinions on BMW's driving experiences as of late. I drove the two prototypes. I drove the gas and the electric back-to-back camouflage prototypes in Germany. And I got out of the i7 and thought, okay, it's quick and it's big and comfortable. And I got into the gas one and I thought, oh, this feels a lot sportier. But I think it might have just been the fact that I was in the i7 before, right? And then the next one felt a lot better, because driving the i7 again here at home for a week, it was it's very fast. Like, it has a lot of power, and it's like, to your point, it's like almost a Rolls-Royce. It's almost Rolls-Royce levels of comfortable, right? Mm-hmm. But yeah, there is like no feedback. There is very little. It's huge. It like rolls around everywhere. It's not great to drive, and I can't imagine that the gas one is much better. And did you have like the M Sport stuff on it? Like, was it fully loaded with that? Or
yeah, I've got the M Sport Package Pro on here, which gives me the brakes with black calipers, Shadowline trim, and then M Sport Pro content. So I don't know. I don't know that there's anything on there that actually makes a difference for ride quality. It sounds like it's all just kind of like branding and visual stuff a little bit, but yeah. And to be clear, like, again, I don't think that it, I like the way that it drives. I'm just in my mind, it's more like a true and 7 Series and S-Class have always competed. Right. But the S-Class advantage was always kind of better ride comfort, more of a, that luxury executive experience. 7 Series advantage was always like, okay, but if you care about driving, this is one that that can do that, can make you happy in that regard too. And it feels like those have just merged. Now they're just going after this hyper luxury experience with you know, top level technology in it.
Yeah, for sure. And you can get a G90 for way cheaper than either of them. So
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting comp because I actually didn't like the G90. This car does all the same stuff, I guess, but the way that, like, you know, the auto doors and things like that were are just a lot less intrusive on the BMW than I felt that they were on the G90. Now, I never really clicked with the G90 in the way that I think you guys did. So,
yeah, I love that G90. I don't know. I like the 7 Series a lot. I think it's like a possibly Star Awards worthy candidate this year, but it's just big luxury sedans in general. And I literally just got out of an S-Class this week at a thing. And I was like, man, these are all so good and so comfortable. But to your point, like none of them really feel sporty anymore or at all. Like it's just,
well, I was just going to say that the G90 that we had in our Star Awards was the one that kind of actually, like when you took it all over to sport, dynamic, whatever drive modes, it was the one that actually had some, you know, some distinction between the drive modes that sport actually made it for me surprisingly fun. Like I was kind of expecting just a big old slushy, you know, luxury car, and it actually felt a little bit dynamic and a little bit entertaining.
It's a great point. I think that's true. I think maybe that's where maybe Genesis is coming in to kind of like fill that void a little bit, or they see an opening there where the Germans are going more upmarket. But
which is funny because the G80 and the GV80 are both like avowedly slushy. Like they're wonderful to drive, but they're not sporty. They're very like avowedly smooth ride, like kind of cushy old school Lincoln kind of feel. And so I was expecting more of that from the G90, which is even larger, but I think they did that great. So I don't know, kind of a non sequitur with regard to your 7 Series, but yeah.
No, totally. Yeah. I mean, totally relevant. They're just all fascinating. Like this is a category of car that I do always feel like I have the impulse to want to have them all back to back to back because there's so many different points of comparison because they just do so many things, especially because of the technology, right? There's zero chance in a week that I will get through all of testing, all of the features, even on just on the inside of the car that it has to offer because it's so incredibly complex right now, but a lot of fun. And really, really, really good seats. So you always start off in a good place with me if you've got great seats. So awesome. All right. Well, guys, as promised, this one's slightly shorter than before. Thanks everybody for joining. Apologies, we somehow missed on uploading the last episode to streaming. So I promise to do it this time. If you're hearing this, it's because I did it. We'll go ahead and upload both of them. So maybe there'll be a two for this week and you can catch up on some content. But if you are an audio streaming person, we would love to have you like and subscribe. If you're more of a watch us live, we'd love to have you join us next week at 2:30 Eastern time, 11:30 Pacific. To ask questions and leave comments and generally join in the fun. But in the meantime, Jeff, Brett, thanks for joining us, and we will talk to you all next week.
Have a good one.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.